Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, October 6, 2016. We'll start with an article on the first page. Fuyao ready for glass production after $200 million investment. By Chris Lusfardi, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Kevin Salofra took a risk by moving his family to the Decatur area in 2008 for a job at the former PPG Industries plant near Mount Zion. A short time later, the company announced it was idling one of the two glass production lines at the facility. For the next 6 years, Salofra said the outlook was uncertain until Fuyao Glass Group purchased the plant in 2014, with plans for a $200 million remodeling project to upgrade both production lines for operation. The completion of the project for the automotive glassmaker was celebrated Wednesday during a ceremony with Fuyao Chairman Tak Wong Cho, thanking those who contributed to the work. The ceremony featured speakers including Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti, Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, and State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet. "We didn't have to look for an opportunity anywhere else," said Salofra, the Fuyao Glass Illinois hot-end manager. "This is exactly what was needed." Joe said construction started in early 2015 and took nearly 18 months to complete. Having both lines operational gives Joe reason to push the operations of the China-based company ahead with high expectations. Glass can be stored in the warehouse portion of the building and be ready to be shipped to customers with up to 60 trucks a day taking it to the Fuyao Glass America facility in Dayton, Ohio. "We have laid a solid foundation for new production," Joe said through a translator. "The goal now will be to strive for high efficiency at a low cost. We're determined to help restore America's status as number one in manufacturing globally." Technology for inside the facility at 2768 East Elwyn Road came from all over the world, including Germany, China, and the United States, said Joe, a hands-on leader who is reportedly a billionaire. Support has come from state, county, and government officials, along with the former PPG management team, he said. "The former PPG staff and employees have worked hard to make this happen," Joe said. The state assisted in retraining 100 former PPG employees to provide the robotics operation and maintenance skills needed with the new technology, said Sean McCarthy, Illinois Department of Commerce director. Fuyao's investment means the addition of about 300 jobs for the Decatur area and Illinois, Sanguinetti said. The site will produce enough glass for 4 million vehicles per year, which Sanguinetti said would cover half the world if the cars were lined bumper to bumper. "That's how much capacity this site will have with all the upgrades," Sanguinetti said. "The investment provides a needed boost to the local economy," Moore Wolf said. "This is a plant that struggled for years," Moore Wolf said. "Many of us were scared it would one day go away. Instead, we now have a state-of-the-art facility." Local officials presented Joe with several keepsakes for the company to mark the occasion, with Moore Wolf providing him a Stephen Decatur medallion from the city. Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce President Marinda Rothrock presented a plaque to honor the jobs created and investment that was made, with hopes of continuing the partnership with the company that has been established. "The investment recognizes the ability of the local workforce," said Ryan McCready, Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County president. "The employees take great pride in what they're doing every single day," McCready said. McCready presented Joe with an honorary gift from other large businesses in the community, featuring a stainless steel plaque Caterpillar Inc. employees produced. This is another example of the great workers we have in our community, McCrady said. McCrady said Fu Yao utilized the services of local labor contractors while completing the remodeling project. Luck's Not With Lady in Drug Dealer Lottery Case by Tony Reed, H&R staff writer. Decatur. A woman who lived with a Decatur drug dealer ended up losing big time when she took a judicial gamble on winning back the proceeds of a $50,000 lottery ticket. The state of Illinois had initially seized the money as the ill-gotten gains of a ticket bought with drug money. But then a Macon County judge later ruled against the state and awarded the lottery cash to the woman, to Keisha Lofton. Now, in a decision filed September 27th, the three-judge 4th District Appeals Court ruled unanimously to reverse that decision and said the lottery winnings deserve to be kept by the state, where they will be shared among local and state law enforcement agencies. The appeals court said the state was right in its initial suspicion the ticket had most likely been bought with the proceeds of drug sales, and that meant Lofton, who said she had lived with the drug dealer for many years, was out of luck. Police had first discovered there was a winning ticket in November 2014 after officers from the Decatur Police Street Crimes Unit and the Macon County Sheriff's Office Special Response Team raided an address in the 1600 block of East Hickory Street. They arrested Terrence Norwood, then age 30, after seizing a loaded SKS-type assault rifle, along with extra ammunition and a quantity of cocaine and cannabis, together with a digital scale. Police say they found the rifle in the bedroom and 7.5 grams of cocaine in the kitchen and cannabis stashed throughout the house. Norwood was sentenced in October 2015 to 16 years in state prison for drug dealing, drug possession, and armed violence offenses. Lofton had been present during the raid that led to those charges, but had told police she was unaware Norwood sold drugs. She also said she hadn't noticed the assault rifle in the bedroom. Under questioning, detectives claimed Norwood told them about the winning $3 scratch-off lottery ticket, which he had already turned in to claim the prize, worth $35,315 when paid as a lump sum. He said the ticket was his way out of having to sell drugs. Norwood stated he was selling drugs to pay the bills until he got that little bit of money, according to court documents describing Norwood being interrogated at the time by Macon County Sheriff's Deputy Brian Hickey. Police further alleged that Lofton, at the time of the raid, didn't dispute her boyfriend had been the one who had purchased the ticket, although she had scratched it off. But in her later court filing, seeking the court proceeds before the Macon County judge, the formerly unemployed Lofton said she had bought the ticket with some cash she had earned. She purchased the first ticket, which yielded a free ticket, with the money she received from babysitting, court documents stated. According to Lofton, the free ticket was the winning ticket. She backed up her version of events by producing a claim form dated October 30, 2014, bearing her name and details. But the Macon County judge had not bought her story and ruled that Norwood had purchased the ticket, more likely than not with drug money. However, the judge said extending state forfeiture laws to grab the proceeds from a lottery ticket was going too far. The judge used examples such as establishing a dry cleaning business with drug money, or a drug dealer paying to put himself through medical school and then going to work as a doctor. Is that money, a doctor's salary, or the profits of a legitimate business, then forfeitable? Wrote the judge. At some point, the connection has to stop. He then ruled in Lofton's favor. The state of Illinois filed a motion to stay that judgment in July 2015, pending appeal. And now the appeals court, after wading back through various examples of case law, ruled the lottery windfall couldn't escape being linked to money obtained illegally. Because of the direct link between the lottery winnings and the funds used to purchase the original ticket, the winnings can reasonably be considered proceeds traceable to Norwood's illegal drug sales, the appeals court judges wrote. The trial court's conclusion to the contrary was an error. Reacting to the appeals court decision, Sheriff's Lieutenant Jamie Belcher said seized cash like this is normally split among the Sheriff's Office, Decatur Police, and the Illinois State Police. The money we, the Sheriff's Office, seize from drug raids goes into a separate drug enforcement account, Belcher said. That is used to purchase equipment and anything the drug enforcement guys need. Belcher said it seemed only fair that a drug dealer or his loved ones shouldn't profit, even indirectly, from the proceeds of drug sales. But fighting it out in court over a winning lottery ticket was certainly unusual. I've never heard of a case like it before, he added. Man, 24, charged with sexual assault of girl. By Huey Freeman, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Cartemius Watson, a 24-year-old man who recently moved to Decatur from Memphis, is being held in jail on $250,000 bond for allegedly sexually assaulting a girl younger than 14. The alleged crime first came to light when a teacher found a note that was passed between students which referred to sex acts. The victim then told school officials that Watson had written her a note asking her to have sex with him on a specific evening in September, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Brandon Rolfs. He then snuck into her bedroom when other members of her household were asleep. In addition to engaging in sex acts with the underage girl, she told police he paid her $4 to perform a sexy dance for him, Rolfs wrote in his statement. After police obtained consent to search the girl's residence, they found pieces of the paper note Watson used to proposition her. One part had been saved by the girl, while other pieces were found in trash bags inside an outdoor garbage can. In the note, Watson allegedly wrote, "Stop being scared. I got you. We ain't gonna get caught." And, "Can you stay up, please? Ain't nobody gone know about us," followed by an explicit request to have sex with him. There are several other additional crude statements in which Watson is obviously attempting to persuade the victim to have sex with him, the affidavit said. The clothes she wore the night of the incident were also taken for evidence. When he was taken into custody, Watson made unsolicited statements to officers. "My life is expletive. I am so expletive," Watson said. When he was informed of his preliminary charges, he asked officers if he thought he might receive a sentence of probation. The age of legal consent for sexual relations is 17 in Illinois. Watson, whose first name is also spelled Cortemius, Cortemius, was booked into the Macon County Jail on September 9th, where he is being held on $250,000 bond. He was arraigned September 19th on two counts of criminal sexual assault, each punishable by 4 to 15 years in prison. On Wednesday, he entered a not guilty plea in circuit court. He is being represented by the Public Defender's Office. In 2015, Watson served 100 days in jail for a burglary conviction in Memphis. He also had prior cases of marijuana possession and a felon carrying a weapon on school property in Memphis. Flexible Seating Calms Classroom by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Michaela Calloway's reading ability has improved thanks to the stationary bike desks in her fifth grade classroom. "I read more fluently now," she said. "I can sit there and read while I'm moving other parts of my body." Michaela is a student in Marija Branson's room at French Academy, where flexible seating and natural light contribute to a relaxed and peaceful learning atmosphere. Around along a low table, Michaela sat with other students who are working on a question about an author's purpose. Is it to inform, persuade, or entertain? And the kids sat on bright yellow beanbag cushions, very squishy and comfortable, with a pleasant glow from a wall lamp to see by instead of the harsh glare of overhead lights. Other students stood at a table raised to the proper height by bed risers, while still others chose lawn chairs or sprawled on a sofa by the window. And yes, one child chose a traditional desk, one of only three in the room, where she sat on her foot and rested her chin in her hand while she studied her book. We go to the floor and listen to our teacher tell us something, and then we go to whichever one we want to go to and do our work and be quiet, Jacarius Bryce said. It's comfortable, and it helps us work better, and we're not uncomfortable, and we just work, and we don't have anything to worry about. Before school started in August, Michaela said, several of the students helped Branson set up the room and decorate it, and Branson listened to and incorporated their opinions. She implemented flexible seating in a limited way last year, but she hadn't learned as much about the science behind it and didn't have as many options for seating as she does this year. Some of her friends suggested a Donors Choose account, which is a website that presents teachers' classroom needs and allows anyone who wishes to contribute. Thanks to a Target initiative to promote healthy classrooms, the stationary bike desks were partly paid for by Target, and Branson didn't have to raise as much as she'd thought she would. Nyasia Pugh Neal used one of the bike desks while she worked on her iPad and demonstrated how a panel in the desktop can be adjusted to hold the tablet at a comfortable angle chosen by the student. She can adjust the seat height, the tension in the pedals, and the angle of the desk to suit herself, and even track how far she's pedaled while working. Besides the health benefits of the bike desks, having flexible seating and more natural lighting has greatly calmed her classroom, Branson said. Students work on their own, learn more, and have far less restlessness. The room is calm and quiet, and kids are focused. It makes for a homey kind of environment, since we're at school so long throughout the day, Branson said. It's hard to just sit there all day long, especially at younger ages. I've done a lot of reading different articles, blogs, research from other teachers on how they started flexible seating, and I made an attempt last year, but I wasn't as educated about it as I was this year. I see a lot of validity to it, especially the bike desks, where they can be moving and still working at the same time. Bus ride from Chicago, alleged assault, get man jailed, by Huey Freeman, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Darius D. Anderson was charged Wednesday with 7 felony counts after he allegedly boarded a Decatur-bound bus in Chicago to sit next to a woman who had an order of protection against him, held her against her will, forced her to enter her residence with him, battered her, and threatened to kill her. At the time of those incidents, Anderson, 22, was serving a 2-year probation term for domestic battery and unlawful restraint for attacks on the same victim in earlier this year. The victim, a woman in her 20s, told police she was on a bus on Chicago's South Side on September 28th when it stopped at 95th Street and the Dan Ryan Expressway. her order of protection against Anderson is in effect until August 2018. Anderson sat next to her. When she tried to get up, Darius held her in her seat against her will, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Kyle Schlorf. He repeatedly pushed her down in the seat so other passengers could not see her. After the bus arrived in Decatur about 8 p.m., Anderson forced her to go with him to her residence in the 3700 block of North Portage Place. Anderson told her he would kill her and then kill himself if she called the police, Schorf wrote in his statement. About 9 p.m., Anderson punched and kicked her in the head because she would not unlock her cell phone for his inspection. When he strangled her, she unlocked the phone. She repeatedly told him to leave her residence, but he refused. When he fell asleep, she grabbed her phone, ran outside, and called the police. When police arrived, they found Anderson asleep in a bed. The victim suffered multiple facial abrasions. Her eyeglasses were broken. Anderson was arrested and booked into the Macon County Jail, where he is being held on $75,000 bond. He was arraigned on charges of aggravated domestic battery with a prior conviction, unlawful restraint, and violation of an order of protection with a prior domestic battery conviction. In his prior case, on June 8th, he kicked in the front door of her residence, punched her, and bit her on the forehead. When she broke free and ran outside, he shattered her TV set and smashed holes in her wall. On April 4th, Anderson entered her bedroom, turned on the light, and began yelling at her. When she went into her children's room to check on them, he punched her in the mouth. He stole her iPhone and dragged her down a flight of stairs by her hair. Anderson is due in court October 19th for a preliminary hearing in his most recent case. Motorcycle accident, Mount Zion. A Mattoon man suffered serious injuries when his motorcycle collided with a semi-truck hauling grain Wednesday. The incident happened about 11:30 a.m. at the intersection of Elwin Blacktop and Carl Road, according to the Macon County Sheriff's Office. When deputies arrived, they determined that the 54-year-old man was operating a 1981 Honda motorcycle, traveling west on Elwin Blacktop. The motorcyclist attempted to pass several semi-trucks near the intersection with Carl Road. The lead semi-truck was turning south onto Carl Road, and the motorcycle ran into and underneath the semi-truck. The motorcyclist was transported to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital and later airlifted to HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield. The accident remains under investigation. Shooting investigation, Decatur. Police are investigating the shooting of an 18-year-old man Tuesday night in the 500 block of West King Street. The victim was reportedly driven by a relative to Decatur Memorial Hospital, where police responded at 8:14 p.m., Deputy Chief David Dickerson said. The victim underwent surgery and was listed in critical condition. Police conducted interviews, processed the crime scene, and were executing a search warrant on a vehicle, Dickerson said. Fire damages house, Decatur. No one was injured in a residential fire early Wednesday at 825 South Illinois Street. The fire was in a bedroom in the front of the house, the Decatur Fire Department said. It was quickly extinguished shortly after firefighters arrived at 1220 a.m. All three adults and two children in the home made it out before firefighters arrived. The estimated loss is $19,000, with severe damage in the room of origin and smoke and water damage throughout the rest of the house. The American Red Cross was called to assist and relocate the occupant. Brass Knuckle Charges Against Woman Dropped by Huey Freeman, H&R staff writer. Decatur. The Macon County State's Attorney's Office has decided not to file charges against a Decatur woman arrested and jailed for allegedly hitting a man in the face with brass knuckles, based partly on a contradictory statement by the alleged victim. Katrina J. Connor was arrested in August after the man told police she punched him, causing a large laceration to his cheek below his eye. A witness also told police that Connor had hit him with a metal ring object on her fingers. But when prosecutors investigated further, they found the alleged victim had done a live feed video on Facebook stating that his injury was from a weightlifting accident, First Assistant State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke said. That video was posted soon after he received the injury. A prosecutor decided not to charge Connor because she could not determine which time the victim was telling the truth. In addition, the victim apparently had a motive to want to get her into trouble. She was originally charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, domestic battery bodily harm, and unlawful use of weapons. The decision not to charge on the latter charge stemmed from the fact the weapon was not in her immediate and exclusive control. The alleged victim agreed with the decision, providing Connor signed a forfeit order to have the brass knuckles destroyed. Prosecutors also noted that Connor had no prior criminal history. Opinion: Plenty of Positives Abounding in Decatur, by Joel Fletcher, General Manager and Advertising Director. Twice each year, the Herald and Review, along with our sponsors, host the Community Leaders Breakfast. I've often referred to it as Decatur's largest pep rally. The breakfast attracts hundreds of community leaders representing business, industry, government, education, and recreation. Thousands more are able to hear the live broadcast on WSOY. Without a doubt, it's one of my favorite days of the year. In addition to our keynote speaker, Max Dryden, we will hear from Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, who will give us an update on the many positives happening in our city. I've always considered myself to be a real cheerleader for Decatur and our surrounding communities. People here step up to the plate when there is a need and when there is an opportunity. On Friday, thousands of individuals will make a donation to the WSOY Community Food Drive. By the end of the day, more than 1 million pounds of food will be collected and used to help needy families in our area. Earlier this week, it was announced that the Howard G. Buffett Foundation donated $3.9 million to construct an amphitheater along the Lake Decatur shore. This is great news for Decatur, and we should celebrate it. We need to thank not only the Howard G. Buffett Foundation for this generous gift, but all of the community leaders involved behind the scenes in making this a reality. I believe it will prove to be an exciting venue for quality entertainment for years to come. This is why I love Decatur. Today, let's celebrate all the positives that Decatur has to offer, because there are plenty. Maybe I'll see you at the Community Leaders Breakfast. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the October 6, 2016 edition of the Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.